Hi, it's Zoe Routh. There is so much good stuff in today's podcast interview with David Leitch from Master Builders Association. You're going to want to go straight away to the show notes at zoerouth.com/podcast/MBA. Phew, let's get into it.
Welcome to the Zoe Routh Leadership Podcast, your source of strategies and insights to make you a better leader. Influence, improve, inspire.
Hi, this is Zoe Routh, and I'm so excited to be here today with David Leitch from the Master Builders Association of the ACT. He is the Director of Commercial Operations here, and he's got an extraordinary tale to tell of what Master Builders has been doing with their charity house projects. So welcome, Dave.
Hi, Zoe. Thanks for having me.
It's so good to hear you. So tell us a little bit about your experience at the MBA here in Canberra.
Okay, so I look after marketing, sales, events, publications, internal and external communications, generally the non-building related aspects of what we do.
And I know you do a hell of a lot of events, right, for the year?
Yes, we do. We have a very big one in the middle of the year, our Excellence in Building Awards, which is Canberra's largest black tie function of the year. Then the next level of industry dinners for about 300, a whole heap of boardroom lunches, information sessions for our members, award shows for our apprentices. So it's a pretty packed event calendar.
Yeah, that's amazing. And there's quite a few members in Canberra as well, right?
Yeah, we represent 1,200 businesses and about 150 apprentices are part of our membership.
Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah. Mm. So tell me a little bit about the Charity House project. When did that start? How did it start?
Okay, so the first one was around 2006 and it, they all start with a similar fashion. It's working together with the ACT government, finding a builder that's happy to come on board, then selecting a block of land, getting a design, involving members, getting it built, and away you go.
So whose idea was this? Do you recall where the genesis was?
Look, I came in at the end of the first one. So David Dawes was the executive director of the MBA back then. He's now the CEO of the Land Development Agency, so someone that we work really close with from a construction point of view. So David would have been the driving force behind the first one. And then I came in at the tail end and have been responsible for the second and third charity houses.
It's quite a remarkable story of collaboration. So you have the ACT government agency, the Land Development Agency, and then you have the MDA as an overarching representation body, and then the individual builders and all the contractors and so on. Can we start with a little bit around the ACT government's Land Development Agency? So their job is to gift, is that the way it works, the gift, a piece of land?
That's right. It's one of the two keys, I think, that you've got to get right first, and that's the government donating a block of land, or in the third one, blocks of land to the project. That's where we have the real opportunity to make some substantial money out of it by having the government donate those blocks of land. Then I think the second key is the selection of builders, and in all three cases, the builders have been really happy to help and involve their subcontractors and suppliers. In the current one, Renaissance Homes, they directly save the build cost over $500,000 by their suppliers and subcontractors either working for nothing or just charging a little bit for the job, nowhere near market prices.
That's amazing. That's a huge amount of money.
Yeah, so we had a part of the deed with the government was they set a limit of we could spend $1.3 million on the build project. We ended up spending about $750,000, so nearly half the build cost and marketing was saved through donations.
Yeah, that's just an extraordinary story of generosity. So what is it, do you think, amongst your members that they feel called or compelled, or what do they get excited about around this project?
Well, in this case, there was a lot of loyalty to Renaissance Homes. They're, you know, one of our really good name brand local builders. That they've got a presence, have built, you know, 50 houses a year. So the people that they use have built their businesses around supporting Renaissance. So there's a real loyalty factor there to start with. But also one of the key objectives was for the benefits to support people with a disability in the ACT. And Andrew's father, Lud, about 6 years ago, unfortunately had an accident on a push bike and became a quadriplegic. So there was a link there for Andrew and his team. And they'd known Lud for 20 years as well and wanted to support him through the project. So there was a real close bond between builder and suppliers and subcontractors, and that made it very easy for Andrew to say, look, we'd like to do this, and people fit in around their paid jobs to help us out.
It's a personal story, you know. I mean, I think that's one of the keys, is when you know somebody who's directly affected, it highlights what the challenges are in a deeper, more meaningful way, I suppose, than just thinking generically about people with those challenges. Do you think that has been a significant
contributing
factor?
Yeah. They know the people, they know the story, they know where the funds are going to help people. So it's very personal. And like I said, that the bond between the builder and the suppliers is very strong. And we packaged up a few other things around it that made the project work. I guess mostly my role is just from a project management point of view and making sure that we publicise it as much as we can to try and give something back to the people who have put in to, acknowledge their support. And in some cases, there had been donations of around $70,000 in actual building materials, which meant someone had to pay for those building materials and then just give them to us.
Yeah. I want to come back to this idea of giving back to the suppliers and helping them out and what you did around there. Let's delve into a little bit around the details of this year's Charity House project at Deakin. So can you tell us a little bit about this specific project? Because it's been the most successful one so far, right?
Yeah, it has. We spent more than 12 months working with the Land Development Agency on the right blocks. They were helping us at a time where land supply was short, so the opportunities in the new greenfield suburbs weren't exactly what I wanted, so I did say no a number of times to some options that they came up with, thinking it would just be the same as the previous two. And I had wanted to do something bigger and a bit different. Originally I was thinking we might build four townhouses, and we had the land that we could have done that, but when we sought advice from our real estate agent partner, the way to maximise the blocks was to do detached housing. So the LDA were very patient with us, and as it turns out, the blocks in Deakin came about through a land swap with the Community Housing Department. And once that was settled, we went into a design phase, firstly we researched the maximise the opportunities, and then the design phase. This project was a little bit different to the other two because it wasn't greenfields, and there was a derelict 1950s semi-detached red brick house straddling the two blocks, which had to be part of the project, was including demolition costs. So that was something a little bit different to the previous ones. The blocks had some history of negativity around the neighbours, because the original plan for community houses was to build four terraced homes there, and the residents weren't overly happy with that. So when we were given the opportunity to do something and showed that we wanted to build two high-end houses, well, they were very happy with that, and I think it suited the street much better than either a townhouse or a terrace option. So in that part, things were very easy, and we didn't get any pushback from the neighbourhood. And considering that, we had two building projects going at the one time, There was disruption. The previous charity houses being in Greenfields, when we were doing functions there, there wasn't a lot of other activity around. We had to close off the street several times for the opening and for the auction. But working with the neighbours, it all went off pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, because I understand, that, tell us about the sale. What happened on the day? It was at auction, and then how much you sold it for, and how much...
Yeah, well, look, you know, leading up to that auction day, we'll probably end up being about 2 months behind schedule. We had a very wet winter, so we were a little bit further in the year that we wanted to be. The real estate agent selected the Saturday to do it. So we had about a four-week marketing period where... both the real estate agent and the MBA opened the house up at various times so we could have people come through it. Our part was that we wanted to showcase the houses to as many people as we could, and the real estate obviously were working with their potential buyers. So we got to Saturday, the 5th of November, and there looked like there was 150-odd people gathered around.
Huge for an auction, right?
A lot of people just interested to see what was happening. There was probably between 6 and 12 serious buyers there. And we started with the single-level house. We called it a bit of an empty nesters. It had three bedrooms plus a lot of entertaining area, and it suited someone that perhaps a second or third home buyer. And started off slow, but the bidding was fierce, and we were so happy with the final sale price, $1.625 million, which was $425,000 above the reserve price.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. So that was something that the LDA, they kept the reserve secret. There were two independent valuations done, and they handed the auctioneer the reserve price on the day. So make sure that there was no influence from outside sources. Then moving on to the second house, it's a five-bedroom, two-story family home. The bidding wasn't as fierce, and we just, through some negotiation at the end, got to our reserve of $1.4 million. And, hindsight's a wonderful thing, and we say maybe we should have just built two single-story houses and could have been different, but, you never know. We were happy that the total package between the two got to over $3 million for the sale, and then that meant that we were going to have, once we took out the building costs, the small amount of GST, well, not so small, but the amount of GST we had to pay, there was still more than $2 million left over for, at that stage, three charities. And one of the charities is Boundless Children's Playground, who had a figure in mind of what they needed to do a second stage of their playground, because originally there was a percentage split between our three charities, Boundless Children's Playground, Hands Across Canberra and Hartley Life Care. And when we got this figure that was outstanding success, the board of Boundless said, well, look, we're happy to take a reduced share. So they actually generously reduced their share from 70% to 55% of the total pool, which allowed us to lift one of the charity's share from 10 to 15, which is Hartley Life Care, and that was a recognition to Andrew Carrick and his team at Renaissance on what a fabulous job they'd done building the house. Mm. And it also allowed us, we had about $200,000 or 10% left to involve another six charities at a $34,000 roughly each as a additional charities, and they were all thrilled to find out this week that they're going to be given the money and receive it, actually be able to use it before Christmas.
Oh my God. So there's the three major charities: Boundless, which is an all abilities playground organization, Hands Across Canberra, which is a community foundation that supports 150 charities around Canberra, and Hartley Life Care, which is supporting people with disabilities in their homes through their independent services. What are the six other charities?
Okay, So the MBA, we picked a couple that were close to our hearts, and one is Oz Help Foundation, which they support people in the construction industry, the counsellors and guidance, drug and alcohol issues, suicide prevention. They do a fantastic job. And another group called Everyman, who work with they work with guys who have fallen off the tracks. You know, they've you know, might have issues where they've got issues with domestic violence or again alcohol, and they're the programs that they do working with men is got some great results. The AFP are recommending clients to Everyman as a part of a strategy of not putting them in jail, or you know, helping them if they've got an issue with a criminal case. And they do a fantastic job. Construction's obviously a male-dominated industry, so things like that, what we can do to keep blokes on track, we're very happy to be involved with. Then the ACT government picked the other four of these additional charities, and there was the Early Morning Centre, Salvation Army, United Care, and St Vincent de Paul's. So each of those six will receive a cheque for about $34,000. And that once it's cleared through Hands Across Canberra and it'll get issued, should be, you know, they'll be able to use that money pre-Christmas.
That's extraordinary. This story keeps getting better and better. It's amazing. So over $2 million raised for charity out of this building project. That's incredible. So how do you feel about all that?
Really proud and happy. Look, I was confident that when we had the blocks that we were going to do well. We had a figure of $1.2 million earmarked as the benchmark, because that was roughly the value of the land, and if we didn't do better than that, it could have just been simply let's auction the blocks off and there's your money there without any effort at all. But pretty quickly into the project, you could see it was going to be bigger than that, and a couple of people said to me, you know, you better just rein it in a bit, you know, don't count your chickens before they hatch. But I couldn't see that it wasn't going to turn out any other way, because we had the building costs under control, and Deakin's a fabulous suburb, and we figured that we were going to get somewhere around $1.5 million for each house. So it was simple. If we kept the building costs to under $1 million and got $3 million for the sale, that there'd be $2 million left over. So it wasn't that hard. So I thought that the opportunity was there, and we just had a pretty focused goal on keeping the costs down, and without affecting any of the quality too, because the type of suburb it was in, we couldn't do a, you know, just an average sort of build. It had to be high end, and using an architect, Alison McCallum, who lives in Deakin, so he wanted to be happy that every day he drove past these houses that they fitted the suburb.
Yeah. And speaking to the people who bought the houses, obviously they knew that these were charity houses. Mm. Have you had any feedback from them about what it's like to buy the property and know that their money is going to nine great causes?
Yeah, look, in this one, I don't think the buyers got caught up as much in it being a charity house. I definitely, the house before, a lovely lady, Cheryl Lee Sutcliffe, bought a house we did in Franklin in 2013, and she told me afterwards she spent maybe about $100,000 more than she had budgeted, because she got wound up in the charity house auction on the day and said, I want this house, and she spent $850,000 on the home, which at the time was the fifth biggest sale in Franklin, and that meant the difference between about $550,000 donation to end up being, no, sorry, it was the difference between about $500,000 and $600,000 that project made.
Yeah.
The scale of this was, I think people were looking at the market value what they could do. I don't think that the fact that they were charity houses meant that people kept throwing extra money at them. They wanted to purchase and bought well. That all they have to do is move the furniture in. These houses came, you know, carpets, window furnishings, most of the white goods were in there. So really they just had to move their beds and their couch in and away you go.
So it was an attractive property, well-built house, beautifully equipped. So it's a no-brainer from, I want that property.
Yeah, look, I think we did really well with the single-level one. I think the family that bought the two-story one got a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
And they all seem happy. The older couple that bought the single-level one, they're downsizing from a house in Fadden. And the family, there's a husband and wife and two kids, they'll have plenty of room to grow into the two-story home.
Great. So let's come back to your suppliers and your builders. Obviously, Andrew Carrick, he owns Renaissance Homes?
He and a gentleman called Mark Newman are partners in the in the building company. It's been around for 20 years. It was started by Andrew's father, and Andrew... Yeah. 20 years ago, but in the last couple of years they brought another partner in, and that's Mark Newman. But it's a family-owned and Canberra-based company.
So they have a very personal interest in this project because of Andrew's dad becoming quadriplegic, obviously. What about the other suppliers? You talked about they're very loyal to Renaissance Homes. Were there any other ones that... What do they feel about being involved in a project like this? What do they speak to in terms of what inspires them to put their hands up and put their hat in the ring for this project?
Oh, gee, that's a hard one to speak on behalf of other people. That I spent most of the time, especially later in the project, working with Mario from Black Shores in Manuka, who they did a wonderful job marketing and auctioning the house. And you know what? If that was a normal project, the commissions and the costs that they would have received if they had have been paid would have been over $100,000 for the two. So the effort that they put in doing it for nothing is fantastic. And you could see that not just Mario, that his team also had a real commitment to making sure that it wasn't just another job, it was a really good job they were doing. And look, I'm sure that there are, you know, personal reasons they're doing, but it's a great branding opportunity for businesses as well, getting involved. I don't think anyone does it because they want to get a pat on the back or increase their business, but if these things are done correctly, there are excellent opportunities for the business to be recognised and to be seen to be giving back, and that could influence other people's decisions down the track.
I think this is a really important conversation to have about charity giving through businesses, because there's always this question, right? Do businesses support charity because they think there's going to be a kickback to their business and that's their motivating factor, or is it that's just a side benefit? And I think it's always, when I speak to people about this who aren't in business, I'm not sure if there's a question of optimism or a question of skepticism around it. What's your sense of the people who participate in these types of projects?
Look, if the result's good at the end, I don't think it matters either way. That if you know, the NBA, we don't do it to increase brand awareness or attract more members or more sponsors to what we do, but I don't think you should shy away from the fact that you're doing this really well and tell people about it. So if you do get some positive feedback that people think that you've done a great job and they might choose your business over another one because you've got a commitment to the community, well, that's fantastic. Some people, they would rather not be recognised, and if that's what they want to do, that's fine. You know, if there's someone wants to donate, you know, $100,000, $200,000 to a project and not be recognised at all, I think you respect that. But if you're doing something like this, I think you should make it part of your corporate profile. It should be on your website. If you do a newsletter, or if there's an opportunity to associate your business with a post-promotional supplement, why not?
I agree with you, and for two reasons. One, because I think when businesses do well, they can do more good. And I think if you can do well by profiling the fact that you do good, it becomes a virtuous circle in my point of view. So if your business is successful, then it allows you to be able to contribute time, money, effort, etc. to these kinds of projects. And people value that you make an effort to do so, and then therefore your business benefits, therefore you can keep going and doing it again. I think there's that virtuous cycle there. And the other reason why I think people should be loud and proud about it, and I've spoken to many business owners who are shy and reserved about their giving in the community because they're humble about it, because they don't want to be tarred with the brush of, I'm doing it because I want to get promotion out of it. So they just keep it as a separate thing, a private thing. I think the reason why that people should be loud and proud about it is that it inspires other people to give as well. And I think this is sort of one of the things that people who are private about it should consider in when they keep it private, is that if their story inspires another business to take the bull by their horns and start a project like that or contribute to an existing project like this, it adds more to the pot in terms of being able to help more people. And I think if that's motivation for people to be less shy about telling their story, I think that's a good one. Because the more people give, the more there is to give, the more the community benefits.
Well, the MBA is probably a little bit different. I think that because we're an association representing our membership, that there's probably an expectation for the MBA to get involved with community projects. Not just the charity house. We train and employ apprentices, so we're helping develop the next generation of builders. We have something that's a little bit unique for us compared to other industry associations, where we have a dispute resolution service, and if a client, a building client, has a concern or an issue with one of our members, we will get involved and see if we can sort it out. And that's a free service at an entry level that we provide. And we've got a full-time licensed builder who is tied up totally with building inspections and working with people on their contracts. And any person that... it's restricted to our members because we can't offer that for to non-members because they're not bound by our code of conduct. But if someone's concerned about making a progress payment or the standard of the work or the paperwork that's involved, they can come to us and get advice, and we don't necessarily just fall on the side of the builder. If there's an issue, we'll ask the builder to rectify it. So there's that. We do other events, not just the charity house, that involve raising money for community groups. And, you know, then there's the big ticket items. And by making the most of it from a publicity point of view, will make the next one easier to get people involved, because they'll say, gee, you know, look at all these people that were involved raising $2 million. Let's make sure that we'll get involved with the next one. We'll have builders come and contact us and say, look, if you do it again, can you consider us to be the builder next time? And they'll have their own set of suppliers and subcontractors to involve. You know, we've got a few loose ideas about doing it again. It'll be probably a 2018 project. We'll give our members a little bit of a break without twisting any more arms next year, and then start talking to the government about the type of project and the land and the type of builder we need, and go from there.
So this takes an extraordinary amount of leadership to run projects like this and to engage the community and to engage all the stakeholders and so on. What's your particular view on leadership? How do you take a leadership role? Have you reflected on that at all?
I think that because I've spent most of my life in business in Canberra, I've sort of grown up knowing a lot of people in town. So if I'm making a phone call to ask someone if they wanted to be involved, I probably know the answer before, you know, making the call, because I know that someone's going to be that this group wants to help, and if it's within their power to be able to do it, they'll do it. So I guess the fact that I've been around in Canberra for a while makes some of those decisions easy. But from a leadership point of view, I think it's very important to be able to know your limitations and work within your strengths. I've got a certain set of skills that I can go to or fall back on if I need. But, you know, if I'm looking at something that's a little bit out of the ordinary, I've got to step very carefully because I don't want to make a bold mistake and have something that's very important fall over because I didn't bring in the right person to help with the project and tried to do it myself. So that leads to surrounding yourself with good people that you can trust, making sure that they know what their role is, let them do the role, and then you can get on with doing what you need to do as well. I think you've got to be focused, very determined, and if you've got a goal, you've got to do everything you can to reach that goal.
That sounds like a very sensible, humble approach to getting stuff done, absolutely. So out of all these charities, is there one particular charity cause that you feel personally connected to in throughout these projects that you've got going on?
Look, with this charity project, the ACT government nominated Boundless as their charity, and because they delivered the big block of land, said that they'd like the bulk of the money to go to Boundless. Originally it was 70%, but that was scaled back to 55%. The MBA chose Hands Across Canberra, and Hartley Life Care was chosen by Renaissance because Ludkerrick spent quite a bit of time with his rehab at their hydrotherapy pool, and Andrew and Lud and his family wanted to give something back to them. Me personally, I'm part of a group of business and government-linked people, a group called the ACT Inclusion Council, and our charter is one to put on the Chief Minister's Inclusion Awards each year that recognise people that do work in the disability field. We also try and build relationships with employers and encourage them to employ a person with a disability. And last year there was a paper or a pack that people could get called Disability Confidence Canberra, and it's a bit of a how-to guide that if you're looking to employ a person with a disability, you need to consider these things, talking about access to buildings and how you go about it. And in next year, we'll hold a series of events where we put business people in a room and talk to them about other groups that can help facilitate employing a person with a disability. So I'm fairly passionate about that. But as far as one particular group to support, not really. My goal, I think, once the charities were set, was just trying to get that figure as big as possible, and the rest would take care of itself.
Well, you did an extraordinary job getting to that huge figure, that's for sure. I have one last question for you, and it's about Canberra. So you've been in Canberra, born and bred in Canberra?
Oh, I was born in Cooma, but I spent a fair bit of my life in Canberra.
Yeah. So, long time Canberran, what do you love about the city?
You've got four seasons. They're very distinct. You've got the extremes from cold and heat, and then, autumn's magnificent when it's calm and the days are very settled. Great golfing weather. So I like that. I like the idea that we're small enough place, but we've got some big ticket items with us. Canberra Raiders, the Brumbies. We've got fantastic playing fields for kids to use, and the institutions available to go and see are great as well. So we're very lucky that we've got assets that only big cities normally have, but we're 400,000 people, so we're a big country town.
It is. It's a lovely place to live. I've been here 20 years, and it's just such a wonderful, beautiful place, an easy place to live. And I think the Canberra community is better for having Master Builders here doing the work that it's doing, and for having you being such a contributor too. So thank you so much for being involved with the podcast today, and also as a case study, and where we get to showcase your story again in front of the conference, the UNConference, the Agile Leadership in March next year. So thanks, Dave.
No problems. Happy to help.